So we've all gathered this morning to bid a lasting tribute to a very good soul in our community. A man who was soft-spoken, perhaps, but his disposition spoke many words. Victor Halila, Chaim was his Hebrew name, was the son of Merkada and Isaac Halila, both, of course, of blessed memory. His wife, Marlene Steinberg Halila, preceded him in passing many years ago. His brothers also preceded him in passing. He was the youngest of the siblings of Leon Halila, Albert Halila, and Louise Halila Rivers. He has survived, and he continued to be well by his very good son, Kevin. And unfortunately, he lost a daughter. They lost a daughter in Stacy Halila also some years ago. As mentioned, he was the baby brother. He was the youngest of all of his siblings. And he was some years younger than his older siblings, really the baby of the family. He looked up to his older siblings so much that they inspired him. He was inspired by the way they led life, by their military service of his brothers. And of course, he lost also his sister Louise some years ago. But they were a loving and happy family. Victor worked for many years for the Boeing Company as a computer engineer, but what I understand from his family, he really enjoyed writing and journalism. You know, so often in life, I think the American educational system could learn from some of this. We don't know what we really want to do until we do something that we really know we don't want to do. And that's often how life works. In some cultures, if you want to be a doctor, you start being a doctor from high school. They have in certain countries, like maybe Australia is that way, maybe parts of Europe. The American educational system, though, is they give everybody the same kind of education and hope you figure out what you want to do by the time you either finish college or high school. But in Victor's case, and in many people's cases, we start doing something and you start seeing life from a different perspective, and then you hone in on really what your skills are. And perhaps he would have been a good journalist. Perhaps he would have been an excellent writer. The good thing is that he realized it during his lifetime. So even if he didn't do it professionally, it still doesn't take away the enjoyment that he would have while practicing those skills. His real passion in life, though, I have to say, was his family, his children, grandchildren, and I understand his great-grandchildren. Being with them and spending extended time with them, even cooking breakfast for them when they would be with him, that was everything to him. That's what he really enjoyed. He had a certain way about him that even I knew him, we've spoken, but I didn't know him real well like a best friend would or a family member would. But I could tell just by speaking to him occasionally, whether it be in synagogue or if our paths crossed at a community event, he did not have an imposing disposition. He was always very yielding. He would always let you, from my perspective, lead the conversation, and he would be a warm and gracious recipient of your words, even if the words that you were talking were just salutary in nature. He was just that kind of a person. He would not impose his way or his self on you. He was just an all-around, well-adjusted, pleasant person to be around. And whenever he greeted you, he was the same. You know, our sages tell us, in Hebrew, it's in the Mishnah, which was written 2,000 years ago, redacted 2,000 years ago. And their advice to us by our sages, whenever you greet a person, whenever you meet a person, do it with a smile on your face. And that's what he did. That was his disposition. And that's how you remember him. That's how I am remembering him. He was also very social. He loved being around other people. In fact, rather than secluding himself, whether it be at times that were challenging, we all have challenging times in our life, or it just at any time, he would always choose people over privacy. And, you know, you might not think that's so profound, but in this day and age, over these last few decades, we hear so many times people say, I just want peace and quiet. You know, I just want to go to my room and be alone. I just want to have, you know, my own time. Victor was not that way. He wanted to interact, wanted to be around people. He was really social, and not social in a social climbing way, but social in a way that he wanted to share himself, and he wanted you to share yourselves with him. It's called interacting. And that's remarkable to continue that at a time when sometimes that's not always the most popular. Of course, he had his children, and Stacy and Kevin, and his sister, Louise Rivers, passed away many years ago. And I heard from one of Louise's daughters, Rebecca, who was talking when the family was talking a few days ago. And she was remarking how her uncle, Victor, really became kind of a parent to her after her mother passed away. And she said very little time would pass. A week wouldn't go by without the two of them talking, without the two of them. He treated her like she was one of his children. They stayed close until the very end. And, you know, that, I'm not saying it's exclusive to the Jewish way of life, but that really is a very Jewish value, to look after, God forbid, when these things kind of happen in life, for siblings to take the mantle and take the children under their wing, even if not moving in with them, just to look after them, look after their well-being. And this was Victor, and it was obviously very well received by Rebecca, so much so that she emotively and emotionally noted it when she was talking to me. The family also commented on how Victor would be very prompt whenever there was a family event or something, the family to get together, he would be the first one there. You know, if something is called for 7 o'clock, he would be there maybe even a few minutes before 7 o'clock. And although they chuckled, and you know, that is somewhat humorous, but to me it speaks to his eagerness and to his desire to convene and be with the people that meant so much to him. He looked forward to it, and he got there with all of his enthusiasm and with his entire self. And that really is an attribute. It really speaks to you, the people with whom he was gathering, and it speaks to how much he loved you. Victor was married to his dear and loving wife, Marlene, until her passing. She was only 60 years old. It was about 23 years ago. His life then, no doubt, changed drastically. He loved her dearly and missed her even more. And then, of course, unfortunately, I shouldn't say of course, but as I mentioned before, unfortunately, tragedy struck once again at the loss of their dear daughter, Stacy, 10 years after that. But with his great faith in God and a loving family to support him and friends, Victor emerged, never forgetting those precious souls in his life for as long as he lived. Victor was blessed with a devoted son and I understand that devoted daughter-in-law, Kevin and Debbie, who I observed the other day rattling off highlights, just like that, of his life. They knew without a pause. And what else can I tell you? It was as if it was a automatic execution of his life's highlights without any pause. But more importantly, they were by his side throughout, especially in these last weeks and I know the last day. They were guardian angels of a man they adored. And Kevin, rest assured that you were and are a good and loving son. A blessing to both of your parents. And during their lifetimes and in our Jewish faith, we are even obligated to continue honoring our parents after they pass, after they leave this world. We honor them by living our lives in the way that they raised us, by honoring their memory, by honoring what they stood for, their integrity, and it's one of the Ten Commandments. And it's one of the most difficult commandments, one of the most difficult precepts to adhere, honoring your parents. You know, we think it's just, hi mom, hi dad, how you doing today? Call them up on Mother's Day or Father's Day. Not so. In their lifetime, honoring parents means we do everything for our parents. We don't contradict them. We make sure they are taken care of in their senior years. We make sure they have shelter, food, and clothing like they did for us when we were children. We look after them. We listen to what they say, of course, unless it's they ask you to violate a precept. If they tell you to desecrate the Sabbath or to violate the Torah, we don't. But our parents aren't that way. So we honor them with kibud. In Hebrew, that's called kibud, honoring of father, va'en, and mother. And I must say, Debbie, you're quite the daughter-in-law as well. Seeing you at your father-in-law's side the other day and tending to him was remarkable, and I'm sure it was just a glimpse what I saw of how you served him and how you respected him and how you honored him throughout his and your lifetime. I'm sure he knew he was blessed and comforted by your devotion over the many years. Remarkably, I picked up on a trait of Victor's that I think is really also worth mentioning and highlighting. Again, especially in this day and age, and you'll see what I mean, it's rare. That is his contentment with his lot. He was very happy with everything that he was blessed with. Just to be around other people made him happy. Watching a documentary made him happy. Watching an occasional sporting event made him happy. Enjoying Sephardic delicacies made him happy, especially if it was served to him by the people who counted most to him, his family. He was happy with his lot in life. He believed he was blessed, and he was. In fact, again, our sages have a pitgam. We'll call it good advice, a good saying. Ezehu asher hasameach b'chelko. Who is considered a wealthy person? A wealthy person, defined by our sages, is someone who is happy with their lot in life. And that's what he was. So he was extremely wealthy. Victor also loved his Sephardic heritage. He loved the synagogue, and he would always assume a kind of reverence when he entered the synagogue. I remember, I could tell you exactly where the Halila family sat in the Sephardic Bikur Holim synagogue, which they were affiliated all their life. And you could see all the brothers sitting in a row. In fact, they sat right next to our row where I sat as a youngster. And I can picture today, they all sat next to each other in a row, and they all had their talets on, their prayer shawls, and all of them were embroidered where the blessing goes on the collar here. It's called the atarat, the crown, so to speak, of the talet, of the prayer shawl that they were wearing. and they all had beautiful ones that were sewn with metallic gold or metallic silver thread on their tallet. And I remember looking at it as a child, I go, wow, they really put a lot of attention into the prayer tallet that they wear to synagogue. So here we are decades later, and I still remember that. So it made an impression on me well before I was involved with what I do in the synagogue. It made an impression on me as a child. To this day, I remember it. And I said to myself then, I go, they must really revere where they are, because this is really important. So on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and on Pesach or wherever, whenever they were in the synagogue, that row looked the same. And my eyes went to each one of their collars. And I said, they are embracing a value in their life. It's called Hidur Mitzvah. When we love to do something, if you love what you do, especially religiously, for example, let's say you have Shabbat at home and the woman is lighting the candles for Shabbat and she wants to make it the most beautiful ceremony and event in her day, she's not just going to put, you know, portable candles on the credenza and light her on the dining room table. She's going to get beautiful silver. The knife that's going to cut the challah is going to be beautiful silver. The mantle that covers the breads before we say the blessing is going to be beautiful velvet. You don't have to have those items to fulfill the mitzvah, but it speaks to your devotion of what you believe in. And they beautifying the tallet that they wore was an expression of them embracing the religion that they loved. He was so happy when the family donated a tree of life in his honor at some point in his life that sits to this day in the lobby of the Sephardic Bikur Holim congregation. He was happy that they gave it to him, but he was equally as happy that it would be sitting for years into the decades ahead, that his name would be on that tree of life as a token of their appreciation of him. And allow me to close with another anecdote of his life that I find remarkable, and you don't hear of this today. And this comes from the family. They highlighted this, that he would, on a summer day, love to take a chair and put it out on his driveway in the sunshine on a beautiful summer day. For what reason? To get a suntan, maybe? To enjoy the warmth of the day, maybe? Because he got off work and wants to enjoy the environment before the sun goes down, maybe? The real reason that he would put his chair on the driveway would be able to greet passers-by as they walked by his house on a beautiful sunshiny day that he felt good. He wanted to spread the joy. And when I heard this story, I go, who does that today? To put yourself out there, say hello to a stranger. Be careful who you say hello to. But say hello, he probably knew. He probably had a good sense of who's, just by looking at people. His neighbors, passers-by, he would sit there and greet them. When you get home, at one point, I want you to look up in the book of Genesis, chapter 18, verse 1. And we are told of our patriarch Abraham. And the first verse is Vayera Elav Adonai Ve'elonei Mamre. God appeared to Abraham in the terebinths of Mamre, and that was a place. The next words are what really triggered this story. Vehu Yoshev Petach HaOhel Kechom Hayom. And Abraham was sitting in the heat of the day outside of his residence. That's verse 1, chapter 18 in the book of Genesis. And we are told Abraham was the consummate greeter of people. He wanted to invite guests. He wanted to take care of sojourners. He wanted to look after people who didn't have, wanted to bring happiness to those who didn't have it. I don't know if Victor did it wittingly or unwittingly. Nonetheless, he sat in front of his home, talking to sojourners, so to speak, greeting them, wanting to spread the joy, share his happiness, giving a part of his life, of his happiness to others. I am surprised by this story, but I'm not surprised by this story, because every time I met him, he struck me as that kind of an individual. Soft-spoken, kind, a good soul, loving, and a wonderful human being. May his soul rest in peace and amen. Amen. This morning we're also going to hear from his grandson Jake Halila and a nephew Nathan Peterson. So without further ado, let's call Jake first. Is that good?
Hi everyone. I'm Jake Halila, Vic's grandson. For those who do not know, my grandpa Vic was Bonka to me. A name given to him by my older sister Samantha at a very young age. My sister and I share so many fond memories of all the little moments with Bonka. The trips to Old Country Buffet, much to the disapproval of our parents, who thought that place was gross. The top tier back scratches he would give, and even the excited way he would intonate the word, yes, or no kidding, when you began talking about something he was passionate about. Woven through these little moments, Bonka showed me a strength that I will never forget. As the patriarch and the head of our table, our family meant the world to him. His wife, my grandma, Marlene, passed 23 years before him. And within our family, he outlived his entire generation. He never gave up, like most would in this situation. He held strong for all those years, setting an example and witnessing the next three generations of his family grow and make him proud. Bonka loved more than anything to just be surrounded by his people. PBS, the TV channel, was probably a close second. He enjoyed having a full plate of food in front of him, especially if it was a home-cooked Sephardic meal, as well as a big cup of coffee and a good kvetch session. At family gatherings, he would be the first to arrive and the last to leave. No doubt. When it was nice outside, he would sit out on a folding chair in front of his house so he could say hi and chat with his neighbors that passed by. When my sister married her now husband, Patrick, Bonka warmly welcomed him into the family and treated him as another grandson. This was very meaningful to Patrick, given that he never met either of his grandfathers. Bonka was so incredibly proud of my sisters and my accomplishments. He never missed an opportunity at a family function to share the latest health update with Samantha and Patrick, who both pursued careers in the medical field. I got to learn from him throughout my life some incredible qualities. Thank you, Bonka, for showing me what it looks like to wear your heart on your sleeve, keep a positive outlook, put a smile on your face, and chat it up with family friends and strangers alike. Because watching you do those things with grace inspires me to do the same. These behaviors are infectious. They bring light to your life and anybody's life that is lucky enough to cross your path. The struggle with this part. Bonka also showed me how to rock a good couch nap. He fell asleep in my presence many, many times. And on Monday, he did so one last time. It was just as peaceful as all the other times. Only this time, my grandma was there to meet him. Rest easy, Bonka. We love you.
I'm hoping I got all the tears out on that one, but I can't promise anything. Hi everyone. It's great to see so many familiar faces here. Never in these circumstances. Those who don't know me, I'm Nathan Peterson. Despite the name and the height, I am Jewish. Uncle Vic might be the only proof of that. He was the tallest person in our family, I'm pretty sure, for a long period of time until I rose above 6'4". And then Sally married Chris, who was 6'7", and I got a post, but yeah, I'm taller children. Uncle Vito, our Uncle Vito. This might be the only time that we've seen you show up hours early. Minutes doesn't do it justice. It was always hours, at least an hour. But he was the last one in the room today. He would have loved this. He would have loved to see every single one of you. This is what he lived for. He would be so happy to be surrounded by so many people who loved him. He would definitely want a giant plate of food. I'm not sure which of you would get it for him at this point, but maybe tonight. He would have brought the pasuya. That food would have been Sephardic, maybe Thanksgiving. Definitely carved the best turkey I'd ever seen. And he taught me and Uncle Dave how to do the same, and it's something that we'll be proud to take on moving forward. But to know Uncle Vic was to love him. And if he liked you, you felt unconditional love and pride. He could talk to you for hours because he enjoyed that energy around him. I didn't actually write this part, but it was wonderful hearing the chair on the front porch. And it was something I actually never knew. And the reason I love it is because I feel like the more that I've learned about him through this, the more I understand things that came to us from him. And Rachel and I made the decision to completely reconstruct our front porch area because we wanted to be able to sit out front and talk to people, and now I know where that comes from. As much as he loved talking to his family and being with Pride, whatever you would talk to him about, everyone in his family, but especially his kids and his grandkids. I would call him, and especially in his later years, he'd answer the phone and he'd say, "Yes?" I'd say, "Uncle Vito, it's Nathan." And he goes, "Yes!" And I'm like, waiting, and he goes, I have caller ID. Okay, am I like interrupting the Price is Right reruns or something? And we would talk and it was, you know, where I've heard stories of, you know, how long he would talk to our female family members. We'll talk more about that later. He was always brief with me, with the men. And we'd talk, we'd catch up, he'd ask about the family, he'd ask about the kids. And in the middle of me explaining something, he would say, "Thanks for calling." Uncle Vito, I didn't learn until yesterday, actually, that Uncle Vito is a name my mom gave him, which is very symbolic considering what we just, you know, heard from Samantha naming him Bonka. Uncle Vito is the only name I knew really growing up. And my mom gave him that name when she was little because she couldn't pronounce the name Vic. Uncle was the title that I grew up calling him. But he really was more than that to our family. It was actually 50 years ago that my grandmother passed away. I never met, but I had a grandmother. Her name was Aunt Marlene. I had a grandfather. His name was Uncle Vito. And I'm so blessed that my kids got to meet him and spend time around him and know that love. Because he treated us like a grandkid, like great grandchildren. He never knew any different. He adored everybody in his family. I know he adored everybody in this room. I didn't get a chance to talk with everybody, but I did. I text with Mag last night. I text with Shelly and Joe and Randy and Sydney and Shelby and our Kalila cousins, and I got some, you know, really good insight. Shelly told me that she's devastated not to be here. She has pneumonia, and you know, obviously we wish her well, and she needs to stay home and get some rest. But she told me that the first time that she and Brett had Uncle Vic over for dinner to their house, he got to the front door, and they opened the front door, and he was crying. Which is normal for Uncle Vic, you know, whether he's at the head of the table or any emotional moment, it runs in our family. And he teared up, and he told him the story about, you know, how the house that they're living in, which used to belong to my Uncle Al, his brother, and my Aunt Mary, rest in peace, both. You know, he bought a house, he and Auntie Marlene bought a house a couple miles away because they wanted to be close to their siblings. They wanted to be close enough to be able to see them on a regular basis. And they did for years. They went over, they played cards, and you know, they had food and they made memories, and it was every single week for years and years and years. And, you know, it really is a beautiful experience that that came around and that he was able to do the same with Shelly and Brett. And that house, 2 miles away, this is going to be the hard part. This is some of my earliest memories in Ardmore. Walking in, the smell. Nancy Marlene's cooking. When you walked in the door of their home, there was a smell of garlic and some sort of amazing potato dish that I craved for my entire life. I wouldn't eat potatoes at my mom's house, but every time I'd go to Nancy Marlene's house, I'd eat anything that she would make. We spent so many nights and holidays together as a bigger, you know, broader family. It was a place where I felt the warmest, the safest I could remember as a kid. And before we'd sit down, every time before a meal, Uncle Vic would take me to that small bathroom in the slider with the sliding door attached to the living room. And he'd show me how to properly wash my hands. I can still see it, I can still hear his voice, and I can still smell the dial soap. Smell the dial soap back then. Meg told me last night that one thing she remembers about Uncle Vic coming was him coming to visit his mom, our great-grandma. He would wear his military uniform, and she just remarked about how handsome he was. And though I never saw that, it was a beautiful thing to hear, like, because one of the themes that I wanted to talk about was how impressive he always was in terms of dress and cleanliness, and, you know, from hand washing to, you know, pick this blue suit because he looks great in a blue suit. You never see him without, you know, that buttoned up, really well, you know, dressed, smelled amazing. You know, he always had this sweet, musky cologne. I don't even know what it was. I almost texted you last night to ask, but if I smelled it, I would know that it was him, and I would be looking around. I learned a lot from that, you know. I take pride in that, and I wanted to, you know, dress as clean as I possibly could today, you know, to you know, remember that. And my boys know every single morning they're not allowed to leave the house without brushing teeth and doing their hair and coming out looking, you know, we call it handsome hair. And, you know, that all started with learning from Uncle Pito. He's a man of simple pleasures. He loved to talk Seattle sports with me all the time. I know he really wanted the Sonics to come back in his lifetime. I was fortunate to go to games with him and Kev, and those are some of the they were the first games I ever went to. So now I'm going to count on him to lobby somebody up there to get the team back because it's been too long. You know, he valued his time shopping at Fred Meyer, eating at Olive Garden, and he may be the only person I know who loved Red Robin as much as my wife. Rachel told me last night that when I brought her to the first family affair, she didn't know anybody, but she went and sat on the couch next to Uncle Maury and Uncle Vic, my mom's renting house, and they thoroughly entertained her all night comparing Ashkenazi and Sephardic recipes for hours. And we all know Sephardic food is the best. Sorry, not sorry. You guys were describing your recipe last night that made me want to puke. but it wasn't surprising to me at all that, you know, he entertained her for that long, because we all knew, especially in his golden years, he was an insane flirt. I assume it started post Nancy Marlene. Somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure she would have backhanded him if she saw him flirting with other women. But even in his hospital days, you know, he had all the nurses' names, numbers, marriage status, and had more options than Tinder for his grandson, Jake. The man was stubborn as a mule. I know Kevin and I have talked about that many times. Samantha and I have talked about that many times, and probably none more than a more recent story when in the last year, he was over at my house, and he needed some medical help. He had an issue going with his leg, and we were trying our damnedest to convince him to go to the hospital. And he sat on my couch and practically cursed me out, practically cursed my mom out, and, you know, refused to move anywhere. And so then we were really lucky that day that my very beautiful and brilliant sister-in-law, Anna, who's back there, who happens to be a doctor, was there with us. And I said, Anna, I'm pretty sure he'd listen to you. He's not going to listen to us. So she sat with him, and he changed his mind real quick. You know, and it's, yes, of course, it is because she's a brilliant doctor, and it is because she has an amazing bedside manner. But it's also because he loves smart and beautiful women. speaking of beautiful women, my cousin Randy told me that she'll always remember his innocence and optimism. She said it's like kids possessed when they haven't been jaded by the world. This was echoed by her daughter, Rob's daughter, Shelby, who said, Uncle Vic's soul is more golden than 99% of humanity. I thought that was beautiful, and I believe it, you know, wholeheartedly. My cousin Sydney said, you know, there was a lot of similarities to her grandpa Al. I know Joe had expressed the same thing, Shelly had expressed the same thing, that the bond that they shared and who they were as people was very, very real and very similar, and so many of the most beautiful parts of each of them, you know, were shared. And when Uncle Al passed, Uncle Vic still emulated that through our family, and I know that the cousins all very much appreciated that. I didn't get a chance to speak with Courtney prior to this, but I know if she were here, or if she is here, that she and I would be laughing about Uncle Vic scolding us for being too loud and disruptive during Passover Seders. We were always separated, many, many times. Okay. All right, so I'm wrapping it up. For those I missed, I'm sorry. I wish this wasn't all so sudden, but you know, I'm excited to hear more stories about him, and I suspect that we're going to be talking about it for a long, long time, a lifetime to come. You know, Kev, Dev, you guys are family, you know, you're what intimately and Uncle Vic were to my mom, his mom and dad, they were to me as grandparents, and that made you my aunt and uncle. I know we're technically cousins, but that doesn't, you know, it doesn't equate. I love your children very, very much. Patrick, little baby Nolan. It's, you know, we have a beautiful family and we're very lucky. And I know that we're going to share these stories for a lifetime to come. Uncle Vito, we love you. We miss you already. You're forever going to represent our family and friends in our heart. And this will be the only time where we can't kick you out of our house with leftovers in tow, but we wish we could.